Leicester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero!
Here goes Ronaldo!
Cross, and Dempsey's denied again, and Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this?
Surging forward with real menace here. Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is!
Soccer Matters. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
The first hour of Soccer Matters is brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. From the RutgersWarehouse.com studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And a big thank you to our first hour presenting sponsor, the Texas Children's Hospital. As always, we thank them for their great support of the first hour here, and they always are right behind the sport of soccer here in Houston, and it's a special place down there at Texas Children's Hospital. So our thanks to TCH. Dynamo announced roster moves ahead of 2019. Tonight we're fresh, as always, on the heels of Fred Fowler, A.J. Hoffman, the Blitz. Let's get after it tonight. Call-in number is 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. Streaming at ESPN975.com. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc. A lot to get into tonight, but two things we have to mention right away. First off, you got to mention the passing of a great owner, Houston Texans owner Bob McNair. From my position, didn't know him personally. Truly a very benevolent guy, a big pillar in our community and a big pillar for the NFL and the Houston Texans and bringing football back here. But don't also forget that along with Jamie Roots, Bob McNair brought high-profile matches to then-Reliant Stadium, okay, which did a lot to identify Houston as a soccer community and an incredible soccer city. It then kind of pulled back the curtains on what we already knew, that this was an incredible soccer town that was just simmering, boiling, and it needed something to expose itself to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. And that first ever game was Mexico and the United States. You may have been there. So big mention and condolences to the family of Bob McNair. Also in our soccer community, a man equally as important, quite frankly, Joby Napier, was with the Cyfair Dynamos Youth Soccer Club. It's headed by Olivier Finidori, Jim Walker out there as well. It's a club that has bucked the system in many, many ways. It's a very family-oriented club. Joby Napier was one of the most benevolent, giving, unassuming, humble guys you will ever meet. I remember once I bought a pair of tickets, season tickets, to the Dynamo to give out to families of patients at Texas Children's Hospital. And all of a sudden I get a call and Joby Napier says, "Hey, Glenn, let me get two as well." And then we got four. Boom. Hey, does it. Doesn't want payback. Doesn't need to be mentioned. Doesn't have to have, a selfie, any of that stuff. Just a guy who got it done. It's so refreshing. And it's so sad that he passed away because it was sudden. And services for Joe B. Napier are going to be on Thursday. Show tonight, Dave Durr, former Major League Soccer coach with the Dallas Burn. Chad Riley, Notre Dame coach. This is a kid we're going to shine the spotlight on. He's not a kid anymore, but he grew up playing the game at Bear Creek Park. He's now the head coach in Notre Dame. He's got him to the Elite Eight. They will take on Indiana this weekend. Peter Vermes, who may be the most candid of coaches in all of Major League Soccer when it comes to interviews and the confidence in how he conducts interviews and talking about his team. Guy's very open. He's excellent. That's why he was is considered for the U.S. national team job, which we all believe is going to go to Greg Berhalter. But he's going to be on the show. We're going to talk Portland. We're going to talk approaches. We're going to talk, you know, what you do with players now ahead of a second leg here. It's down to one game now. Atlanta United absolutely blew it out of the water. Have we ever seen an environment with 70,000 people like that in the game? I know Seattle fans are probably going, yeah, we have. That pregame show, that whole pomp and circumstance, that was incredible. That was as good as anything in sports in this country this year, quite frankly. The way the stadium was sectioned off in the three colors of the team. It looked like the Nou Camp in Barcelona. Unbelievable. And Atlanta United getting past the New York Red Bulls 3-0. There's a lot of conversation and talk. I do believe we have the sound, right, of Chris Armas. We'll get that in a minute. It's okay. We can hold on that. But Chris Armas, there's a lot of talk. Oh, he got it wrong. He overthought it. And I think there is something to that. Now, he did go on to explain his position and why he did it, which is also good. But he did go away from the nature of what his team is good at and asked them to do it very differently than he had throughout the year. And I'm sure there were real concerns about playing Atlanta United, 70,000 people. This is an environment unlike any other. On artificial surface. And then you have to cap it off with, this is a playoff where things are different. Playoffs. Execution. Everything is magnified. Mistakes are magnified. There is no fallback position. Discipline. Speed of thought. All these things come into play. No do-overs. Choices you make. Advance you or don't. What you do in certain sections of the field. Are you acting like a defender as a striker coming back defensively in your defensive third? As you join into midfield as an outside back, are you taking care of the ball so that you don't lose it in a vital area that leads to a goal? I saw that today with Roma and Real Madrid. Real Madrid, as rough as the season has been, they got a win over Roma today in the Champions League. So you can talk some Champions League as well. 713-780-3776. But I do think we're getting close to getting into what is called Game On for 90. Let's hit it.
Game on, man.
Here's Glenn Davis.
Game on.
With Game On for 90.
Presented by Bud Light. Game on.
All right, so I'm on the clock here. Let's talk the recent River Plate Boca Juniors Copa Libertadores. The second leg nightmare at River never got off the ground. Fans attacked the Boca Juniors. Bus, glass shattered, tear gas players. Guys went to hospitals. Meanwhile, CONMEBOL President Alejandro Dominguez had compared the Copa Libertadores and the UEFA Champions League prior by saying Copa Libertadores was real football, while UEFA Champions League was PlayStation. So let's compare the two leagues. Personally, I like the Copa Libertadores. You know why? Because there's a rawness to it. There's a chaos. There's an Ozzy Osbourne crazy train feel to it. It's raw music versus computer driven. It's fans sitting in some stadiums by the thousands on slabs of cement. Copa Libertadores is the kryptonite to UEFA Champions League, which some feel is over-homogenized, sanitized, solely about money and business and global pursuit of business the priority. It's slick. It's finished. Still, I despise the criminal element around Libertadores and attacking buses and players. To the point they're in fear to play a soccer match is unfathomable. Some say, oh, that's just a part of it. Well, if it is a part of it, it's a pretty pathetic part of it. By the way, buses have been attacked in Europe also in the Premier League. Remember Dortmund's bus also being bombed before their Champions League match against Monaco. Now, in the end, this is a huge missed opportunity for the Copa Libertadores. It's a huge mismanagement of leadership and all involved, who had a great opportunity to showcase rich Argentine tradition and passion. They screwed it up. Remember, this was and is the last time two legs will be played for the Copa Libertadores title. It's going to go to a neutral site. Not to mention it featured Argentina's two greatest teams. The eyes of the world were on this. FIFA, CONMEBOL, you blew it, and you made it worse, delaying a match where players were tear-gassed and hospitalized, an incredible injustice, an out-of-integrity moment for player safety and concern for the guys who are out there doing it on the field by remarkably delaying it and saying it would be played. lost a rare moment in showcase for Libertadores. Integrity, CONMEBOL, you have once again proven your rank amateur leadership. And that is Game On for 90. So comment on the River Boca situation. Now they're saying it's potentially going to be played in Paraguay. It's going to be potentially played in Miami. Frankly, the edge is off it. It's a buzzkill. 713-780-3776. So tonight I'm taking the Dynamo General Manager, Matt Jordan. We're going to really talk about the Dynamo roster moves ahead of 2019. We're going to dig into it. I can tell you, I did this interview before the show. We taped it. And you're going to hear some really good stuff from Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. We're thriving for soccer information. We want to hear about players. We want to know why Dylan Remick, Max Steves aren't coming back. We want to know these things, and that's a part of being a fan. So I think Matt Jordan, clearly great interview tonight. You're going to want to listen to that. You're going to want to listen to Peter Vermees, Dave Durr, and Chad Riley as well. All right, so I'm gonna take you in, and this goes pretty long here, but a lot of the talk is around overthinking it sometimes as coaches in playoffs. And there's the thought that Chris Armas overthought it, but you also have to hear his response, because his response is an interesting one. We're not going to listen to the whole thing, but I want you to get kind of a sense of how Chris Armas addressed the media and the fact that their team went away from the nature of pressing higher up the field.
There's a few things. One, if anyone's watching closely, you know, we're a high-pressing team, and on certain days that teams build out of the back, we really get to have some fun with our pressing. But there are also times when teams bypass the pressing and we have another way of pressing, which from a deeper block where we flatten out a little bit. So knowing that Atlanta was going to play direct, for us, it's what we expected. We watched the New York City series. They're 20-plus percentage long balls, and that's against New York City. So against us, we really expected direct play, which is exactly what we saw. So we, on the day, we see 23% long from Atlanta without us all out pressing. So if we started pressing, then what was it going to be? 30%, 35%. So the idea of not getting stretched, I think, was a good one. I think it was a good one. And then we give up a few goals later on in the game. And in the first half, yeah, I mean, we still tried to be talk and prepare to be aggressive even from a deeper block, which we let the goal slip that way, but it's still a crust that we could maybe deal with. So yeah, no, I know there's dialogue out there, but again, we know on the inside with some of the pressing that we press also from deeper areas. And
all right, so essentially Chris Armas is talking about a second area and a deeper lying block that presses. But if you look at the first goal, this is where it all unraveled. A center back, Jeff Larenowitz, is allowed to carry a ball 40, 45 yards before then delivering an absolutely beauty. He has absolutely no pressure on him. So this low block that was to be a low block of pressure failed. And it failed and gave Atlanta United the game's first goal and really changed things in a big way. Now we can all sit here and second guess Chris. And Chris has obviously done tremendous work with the New York Red Bulls. We can second guess, and that's what part of being a fan is and everything. But look, the bottom line is they lost 3-0. And when you lose 3-0 and you go against the bread and butter of the way you play normally during the regular season, you're going to get criticism. And in his description, he had a real thought-out belief. This wasn't just, hey, we're going to drop off and, you know, we're going to apply pressure here. There was a little more to that based on the Chris Armas response. But in the end, it comes down to a simple moment of allowing Jeff Larenowitz carry a ball deep into your own half. If you're going to defend and press in a lower block, then you got to get pressure on the ball. There was no pressure on the ball. Boom. Game's first goal. So that was interesting. That came in the 32nd minute. And then you can say to yourself, well, you know what? What if New York came out and tried to prevent the backs of Atlanta United from playing vertical and hitting long balls? Could they have done that? I think Atlanta knows that New York Red Bulls can't for 90 minutes keep up that type of sustained pressure they had at Red Bull Arena. They're certainly going to try it because they're three goals down and they need to stir the game up. They give a road goal up, it's trouble. But I see Atlanta United getting to the final. Hey, what a revelation, right? 70,000 fans. Unreal visual and acoustics in Atlanta. They're reversing the trend on the New York Red Bulls 3-0. It was done in convincing fashion. Martinez, Escobar, Villalba. The third goal, I mean, that comes in stoppage time. That's a crushing blow. Environment beyond belief. Mercedes-Benz is going to host the MLS Cup, barring a historic comeback from the Red Bulls. Chris Armas was quoted as saying, we're going to go home and we're going to get it done. I like it. I like the confidence. I like the bravado. Sporting Kansas City gets a draw. And this is in direct contrast to Red Bulls and the way they approach their game. They go to Portland and they say, you know what? We're not going to defend in a lower block. We are going to press higher. We're going to try and make it difficult for them. We are going to be aggressive in every area of the field. And when we get the ball, we're going to use one of our strengths, which is our possession game, to try and help manage this thing. Now, they were outshot 6-1. Possession, though, was about even. Yet in three games this year, the Portland Timbers have not scored against Sporting Kansas City. The only game there were goals scored between these two teams were at Children's Mercy Park, 3-0 during the regular season. Frankly, I don't think the regular season even matters now. Graham Zuzzi and Matt Beisler, special mention, veterans. You're going to hear Peter Vermees talking about his team against and headed prior to the Portland Timber match. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number. Restraining order on Jermaine Jones, the former U.S. national team midfielder, against some Hollywood actor who I've never heard of, who apparently is trying to mess with his wife. That's not a good thing. It's been a bit rough for Jermaine post-playing career. Zach Steffen to Manchester City. Expect him to be loaned. USL has recognized the Players Union, USL Players Association. Important step for advancing professionalism. It's a big one. Back in my day, I was on a team that folded, and I had an injury that needed surgery. Nobody wanted to pay for it. I had to go to court and get somebody to actually pay for it. So there you go. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776. Give me a reaction to the Dynamo and what they put out today with their roster. Anything there surprising? I don't think there's too many surprises there. Which is the better league? Do you like the Copa Libertadores, which is quote-unquote real football by CONMEBOL president Alejandro Dominguez? Or do you like UEFA Champions League, quote-unquote, PlayStation? And by the way, for all of you that are bagging on Atlanta United, you're just jealous. You're just jealous. This is more than about resources that they're putting together down there. Trust me. This is more than resources. 713-780-3776. First hour presented by the Texas Children's Hospital.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Don't forget tomorrow, Liverpool taking on Paris Saint-Germain. That's one of the big ones. There's one right there that proves to you that money doesn't necessarily equate into winning everything. PSG's been trying to do something in the Champions League forever, and it just never happens. Manchester City, potentially the same way. We welcome you back here. Again, we remind you, we've got the most amazing First Hour presenting sponsor. It's the Texas Children's Hospital. Hundreds of children are diagnosed every year at the Texas Children's Hospital. It isn't their job, it's their life. With Texas Children's Hospital is a not-for-profit organization. It relies on generous donations from friends in the community and beyond to help us provide high-quality programs and services. By the way, they've got amazing amounts of clinical trials going on, over 200. Those are dedicated solely to childhood cancer and blood disorders. Over 190 physicians and scientists. It is the largest pediatric cancer center in the country. It is Texas Children's Cancer and Hematology Centers. And with that, we welcome in a great friend of the show, credible acumen when it comes to Liga MX, and also a tremendous writer. He is Naib Moran, and he joins us now. Naib, how are you?
Good, Glenn. Glad to be here in the new setting of the studio.
What do you think? Looks pretty good. How about this La Panterita?
La Panterita Ellis. Doing a lot of charity work down there in Honduras.
He is.
Great fella.
Computers to schools and stuff. And credit that. He's a very young man, and for him to be stepping out in that vein of charity and give back, it's a great thing. All right, so the first thing I want to talk to you about is this whole debacle going on with River Plate and Boca Juniors at Copa Libertadores, incredible moment. We heard from the CONMEBOL president, Alejandro Dominguez, before it. He compared the Copa Libertadores to the UEFA Champions League, and he did it by saying this. He called Copa Libertadores real football. He called UEFA Champions League PlayStation.
Hmm.
Which do you prefer, Libertadores or Champions League?
Well, I don't agree with the comparison or the description of Dominguez. I think, of course, when it comes to marketing and all that, Champions League is a leader. But I feel that Champions League is the best exposure of the game and to this date. I mean, when you ask a lot of coaches, they say it's kind of like a World Cup every year when you see the Champions League because it's the best players of the world go there. A lot of South American representation is in the Champions League, and it's what makes it such an important tournament for the game. It's just differences of socioeconomic.
Does it ever feel
also
too slick to you, over-homogenized, over, you know, does it, you know, it's almost too perfect sometimes. That's why the chaos and the little
gritty,
bit of the edginess.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about throwing stuff and breaking into buses and attacking people and injuring and killing people, but I am talking about that kind of off-the-rails Ozzy Osbourne type feel that Copa Libertadores brings you. You know, fans sitting on slabs of cement as opposed to cushy chairs.
Exactly.
There's just something that feels different about it.
Is it something romantic as well, not to the sport? You know, when the Argentines speak about their clubs, River Plate, Boca, Racing, you know, all these clubs, San Lorenzo, there's some mysticism into it. And I think you don't see that in Europe because of the, you know, for example, you see PSG. You know, Jordan brand now and all this, you know, kind of being the stars in Paris and all this fashion deal. But you don't see that in South America. South America is more, it ties a little bit more to the people in some way or another. But you see it in Germany as well, how it's tied to the people when you see a Dortmund, when you see a Wolfsburg, a Schalke. But I think when you see the Libertadores, it's kind of the origins of the game. You know, that's why the first World Cup was in Uruguay in 1930. And you see Peñarol, you see
At the Estadio Alberto Supici.
Uh-huh, exactly. So
I think I pulled that one out. That's because I've been covering the under-17 Women's World Cup and some of the games were held there.
Yeah. And it's a nice one from Mexico, by the way.
See how honest I am? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know it all. You got to learn it somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Too many of us on the air think we know it all. Keep it all in context. By the way, we're just radio hosts, okay? We're not changing the world.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that's what you see there. You know, a lot of the origins or many of the players that we end up seeing in the Champions League, we see them in the Libertadores before, you know, and I think that is something to prove. But I think at the end of it all, the Champions League is where you see the dynamics of the tactics, you see the strategy, you know, you see the vanguard people like Pep Guardiola and all these important coaches nowadays. And that's why it's ahead of Libertadores.
Guardiola today saying suffering against Leon, good for City's Champions League hope. So today, 2-2 draw Manchester City and Leon. Bayern Munich 5-1 over Portugal's Benfica. Chesika Moscow 1, Victoria Plens 2. Ajax 2-0 over Ajax. They had fan problems there. Real Madrid 2-0 over Roma. First goal in that game was a mistake. Gareth Bale pounced on. Listen to this quote from Pablo Perez, the Boca Juniors captain. He said, quote, he feared for his life. If the second leg would have gone on, quote, I cannot play on a pitch where I know I could die. How can you play on a pitch where there is no security? Glass was flying everywhere in their bus. So one of the things he went on to say, Naib, and this is pretty incredible. He said, let's say the second leg went on and we won at River Plate.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel like they would have got out of there alive.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that heading into a match, it just messes you up psychologically. I mean, it's not stable for the footballer. It's not fair, you know, for the visiting team to kind of have to deal with those problems. And it is also a kind of a shame, no, for the system in Argentina to get it to this point, no? To get to the point that this is the moment that you've been waiting for so long, a Copa Libertadores final, your two biggest clubs, and it's marred by these type of acts, violent acts. I mean, and also this lack of organization, that it was going to start, that it wasn't going to start, that we're going to move it 3 hours, and at the end, nothing happens. And now we're thinking about the game is going to be somewhere else. So, I mean, I think it's this unfortunate lack of organization. It also tells you a little bit of the situation.
Lack of integrity, too, though. I mean, to even begin to think that you're going to try to quickly play this game so you can shift the attention onto the game and away from the attack on the bus and guys in the hospital, not to mention Boca Juniors at a competitive edge with guys injured or affected by the... I mean, to me, it made... all the leadership, you know, looked like a joke, yeah, amateur hour.
And a lot of the main, you know, the presidents of both clubs were talking about, oh, well, it's because of the fault of these crazy fans or these crazy, violent people, aggressive people. But it's not about that. It's not about a certain number of people. I think this is more of a societal problem, that it's permitted, that, you know, nowadays... You know, the fact that a visiting side can't go to the other team's house.
How does the visiting side even get to the bus? I mean, exactly. That's a real question, too, from a security standpoint. But I think what you just said is incredibly important, that they believe they can get away with it. They know they can get away with it.
Yeah, because none of them, I haven't seen any news of, like, the police going at, you know, raiding the people's houses and getting them out and putting them in jail. Because, I mean, that's it's getting out of control.
That's the exact thing I was looking for. I was like, okay. Next day or two, are we going to see arrests? Are we going to see names? Are we going to see photos? Are people going to be put in jail because they're criminals?
Yeah, criminals. They're messing everything up. And I mean, I think it's not a safe environment for kids to go.
But then why do people say, oh, it's just part of it? Have they been conditioned to believe that's a part of it? Because if that's so, that's pretty scary.
No, it's scary. You know, when they say that it's part of it and that's the condition, you know, I think it goes a lot to the ties of how they're viewing the game. No, I think Argentina's a country, they're always going to a World Cup thinking they're going to win the World Cup. You know, there's this obsession to win no matter what, no matter what you do. I mean, there's no lack of integrity, like you said, Glenn. I mean, it's now
you can't win if you don't play a game.
Yeah. But then again, how you do it and what's going on inside the club and outside the club that is kind of messing up the game a little bit over there. But it's unfortunate because... First, the game got postponed because of rain.
Yep.
Then it went on again. And then, you know, a lot of journalists made the trip down there and there was no game.
It's lost its luster. It's definitely lost its luster. And this incident has made it, honestly, it's less appealing to me. It's going to be less appealing to many in the United States who might have in the beginning jumped on it as mainstream because they've heard this. This is the most incredible rivalry in the world. Well, when they see people smashing buses and all, it's like, yeah. Peace out. We don't want anything to do with it.
And actually, Gallardo, after the match, you know, after the horrible events, he was like, it's incorrect to say that it was the final of the world. No, that it was like, this is the world's final. No, it's a final of the Copa Libertadores of America. Yeah. I mean, that's how it should have been said. Not that it was a final that all the world wanted to see, you know?
Yeah, it was promoted in a lot of different ways. All right, I want to switch to Liga MX. We got Naib Maran in studio, and Naib is really schooled on Liga MX, got knowledge beyond belief, and from what Victor Ariza tells me is when weekends come and the Mexican League's on, don't bother Naib Marin. So it's pretty fair to know what you're doing on weekends. All right, so I want to take you to one that kind of connects with Major League Soccer. Tijuana Cholos now have Oscar Perea from FC Dallas. How do you think this is going to go down, and what's some of the perceptions coming out of Mexico?
No, I think there's a lot of curiosity into what he does. I think his presentation with Dallas in the CONCACAF Champions when he went down to Pachuca, and that was a great series, Pachuca, FC Dallas. I think that created a lot of curiosity in his coaching ways. Of course, the last manager, Juan Carlos Osorio, was Colombian, Mexico national team manager, so there's some connection there with his. You know, this is a manager that has made his name in the game here in the United States, and now he's going to Mexico to kind of prove himself or test himself out with some of the best coaches in the region. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of questioning at first from the Mexican press to kind of understanding where he's coming from, because you got to contextualize his setting in FC Dallas, where he brought in a lot of young players. Into
so wait
the
a minute, wait a minute. Mexico doesn't like Colombians getting coaching jobs? You got to be Argentine?
No, I mean, I think it makes it more difficult, I would say, you know, when you don't have you know, that pedigree that the Argentines
get. Oh, because
get.
He's coming from MLS, right? That's still that's kind of the one. Prejudice that Liga MX has about MLS coaches and players.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a change of currents, no? And I think we saw it with the players, you know, when, you know, I'm trying to think of names that, you know, when Omar Gonzalez went from LA Galaxy to Pachuca, that's an example. Donovan going to León, even though it wasn't a success, but he
that
went
to me,
down there.
What was that? That was just... I don't know what
to this
was
day, nobody
grab.
Knows. And Leon,
I love Landon, but that was a money grab. I'm as big a Landon Donovan fan as there ever was, and I'll argue with anybody. But
DeMarcus Beasley also when he went down there.
DeMarcus, you know, had a real career in Mexico with Puebla.
Hercules Gomez rescued his career.
Hercules,
down
well, what people forget is the first guy to ever break in down there, Clay Koeman, as a defender who actually began and came captain of Cruz Azul. Now, think about that, an American in, I believe that was the 90s, okay?
That's big.
As a captain of Cruz Azul. Now, he was a big, rugged center back, and our heart goes out to Clay, by the way, because he is fighting cancer right now. Getting the signal from producer Tyler Scott that it's time to take a quick break here. Stay with us, Naib. We're going to come back more Naib Marin. We're going to talk about Mexican League playoffs here. We're going to get to the good stuff.
Right.
We'll take your phone calls at 713-780-3776. Coming up in the second hour, Dynamo General Matt Jordan, General Manager Matt Jordan will join me. Matt, very candid about some of these player transactions, so you're going to want to listen to this in the second hour. Also, Peter Vermees takes us really kind of deeper into some thoughts on their second leg against the Portland Timbers. Maybe the best managerial interview in all of Major League Soccer, Peter Vermees. And I know Mike Petke fans are going to probably want to go up against that one. But they're different types of interviews. Both are very good. Both bring a lot of color. Both get the importance of media and how they do it. But you're going to want to hear that Peter Vermees interview. And then Chad Riley, a great local story in Houston. Grew up playing the game in Bear Creek Park. He is now the coach of Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish will take on Indiana in the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament. We'll take your phone calls as well, 713-780-3776. First hour presenting sponsor. It is the Texas Children's Hospital.
Need a new restaurant to go to?
Do you know where I could find an organic Vietnamese taco truck around here?
Visit culturemap.com to get the latest restaurant and bar news from Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 as we roll on here tonight. 713-780-3776 is a number to call in here tonight. Visiting now with Naib Marin. All right, let's talk about the Mexican League playoffs now. Give us a couple of things to really look for as playoffs kind of going concurrent with Major League Soccer.
Yeah, no, I think, well, the top game, I think, of the four that are going to be going on is, I think the best one is going to be Monterrey-Santos. And why do I say this? I think both teams are, you know, equal on points and are, you know, the fourth and fifth seed. So, I mean, that gives you a sort of idea that's going to be kind of a tight series. Santos is a defending champion. And, you know, there's only been two back-to-back champions in the short season format history, Pumas and León. So now here, Santos is an opportunity, a big one, you know, to kind of reestablish or establish itself as one of the main clubs.
So many successful years there for a while.
Yeah, yeah, and recent as well. I mean, we're talking about in this decade, just this decade alone, three of their six titles came in this decade, this present decade, so they can add a fourth one.
Something interesting. Thursday, Major League Soccer goes head-to-head with Toluca America and Tigres and Pumas.
Yeah, that's another one. I think Tigres lately has been one of the main clubs in Mexico, you know, because they have Gignac, but because of the consistency that the club always seems to show up. You know, they might start slow this season, but they're always going to find a way to get there in the playoffs, and they did it once again as the sixth seed. In their last three matches before the end of the regular season, they scored 9 goals and conceded only 1. So they're entering in good form, 3 straight wins into the series. Pumas had an excellent season, 30 points around there, third seed in the end. You know, historically, it's one of the teams that is always, you know, there fighting for titles with this philosophy of always giving opportunities to academy players from La Cantera. And they're back in there. So, I mean, I think it's special to note there's a rivalry going on between the North clubs and the Mexico City clubs. And right now you have America, Pumas, and Cruz Azul as the Mexico City clubs. And then you have Monterrey, Tigres
and Rayados and Santos.
Uh-huh. So, you know, you see those three against those three, and maybe the champion's going to come out from that mix.
What about Cruz Azul? Breaking hearts again?
Well, look, Cruz Azul is having a fantastic 6 months, you know, at the start.
I have a friend here who he doesn't believe anything will ever happen when it comes to winning a championship again. I feel very sorry for him because he goes through this. It's almost excruciating to watch this friend of mine because he is so passionate about that team. But, you know, when I talk to him about it, sometimes I don't want to lead him into it because I just feel like I'm taking him to a place of dark, deep pain.
I mean, it's hard to have hope when you're a Cruz Azul fan because you really don't know if it's really true what's going on or if it's just going to fade away right away. And the thing with Cruz Azul is they won the Cup, which of course is not a tournament that has a lot of prestige in Mexico, but winning the Cup means that you take serious a tournament and you beat Rayados in the final at Rayados turf. So I think that gave a boost of confidence to the team. Pedro Caixinha, Portuguese manager, already won a Liga MX title with Santos. Now he's trying to win a second one with a different club. It seems that Caixinha loves coaching, and Mexico seems to have a knack to get the teams right. They went in the offseason, got phenomenal players like Elias Hernandez, Milton Caraglio, striker. They also got Roberto Alvarado, who is one of the main youngsters to look at from Mexico national team perspective. And I think they're heading in the number one seed. You know, there's a tendency to say the number one seeds don't win, but this team is rolling. 11 wins, 3 draws, 3 losses in the
regular season. How has that played out over the years? You know, because in the United States, honestly, as much as I'm such a big believer in supporter shields because and winning the league, because to me that's consistency. That was what I was told about great teams are consistent. But with the playoff structure, can be a whole different thing. I mean, we have to be very clear and admit that really average teams, sometimes below average teams, get into the playoffs in MLS. Do you feel like that in Mexico? And does the regular season normally play out when it comes to the playoff structure and who ultimately lifts the big prize?
You know, I think there's a lot of series of thoughts when you mention that. I mean, because you can note that, well, the team entering into the Liguilla with the better momentum has a better shot of winning. But I like seeing that kind of consistency. Santos is the case. I mean, they were champions last season and they're back in the Liguilla and they have a sturdy kind of 11 going on. Tigres, the same thing. Back in last season in the Liga, they were eliminated by Santos, but they're back in this season. America, the same way. When I see it, I think lately, the teams that are well structured, like the case with Cruz Azul right now, that is getting good results. There's a good mesh with the manager. Even the directors are on the same page. When everyone seems to be in a union, good things tend to happen. I mean, but you see a case, for example, like Chivas, just several seasons ago. They were on a roll with Matias Almeida, who's now going to coach Earthquakes. But then once they won the championship, they fell apart for some reason. And it was the same bunch of players and the same idea. So there's a tendency to see fallouts. But I think as of late, in the last years, I think we've seen some type of consistency. And you kind of get a sense who the contenders are.
Naib Moran joining us here in studio. You've seen his writings for ESPN FC in the past. He's covered the Mexican national team. Is it interesting to see that Mexico, in some ways, is kind of in the same place as the U.S. national team with this inability to get a manager hired? And do you really believe it's going to be Tata Martino, or could the U.S. swoop in at the last minute for the love of God and bring in Tata to coach our national team? Look, not that I don't like Greg Berhalter, because yeah, I think he's a talented young American manager.
Look, I think the region where we're at, Glenn, I mean, CONCACAF, it gives you this leeway to kind of take it slowly, you know, to you don't have to rush it. You know, there's plenty of time. They always say this.
I'll tell you why you have to rush it. Because you're 13 months into it, and whoever would have been the manager would have had 7 months. Okay, it takes a couple months. I get it. But would have had 7 months to work with these young kids, get a real good grip on them, set the standards of purpose of play. You're in a place, even with this youth, that you could potentially change the U.S. playing style and alter it in some ways with all the characteristics that it currently has for the better. So it's a monster 7 months. And if you're a coach, you know what 7 months is as a professional soccer coach, whether with a club or with a national team.
Yeah, but there's a lot of coincidences. I mean, I do sense that there is a lack of being quick, of acting quick, because you can't waste time.
So is this indecisiveness?
I think it's indecisiveness, but also the lack of the top, the people in charge. I mean, if you want to kind of change the way that your team plays or put up a set of standards, you got to act fast. You can't let 6 months go and be like, oh, well, we're just going to give these players some chance to play.
But it's a lot of suits making decisions, though. I mean, there is some soccer experience for sure at U.S. soccer, but I'm saying in Mexico, I always hear it's, you know, you've got guys that couldn't kick a ball making all the decisions.
Exactly. But look, at least we're coming off a process that actually lasted more than 2 years with Osorio. I mean, it didn't last six months. It wasn't something, you know, it was something that it was a work in progress. And Osorio decided to leave. And now with Tata Martino, we'll see exactly how it works out. I mean, everything seems like it's going to be him. He's a manager with vast experiences.
What makes you think 100% it's going to be him? Just because there's been so many rumors around it?
Yeah, I think once it got out from the network, Televisa and Univision, and, you know, those two are well connected to what goes on.
But not always reliable.
Yeah, but once it comes out from those two networks,
so
you know that
it's a done deal.
It's a done deal.
Okay, so you're saying Tata to Mexico.
And we'll see what happens in the Gold Cup, no? Because, you know, that's the first test. That's the first test
for
the U.S. and Mexico.
Both, yeah.
And then we'll see how Mexico acts if Tata doesn't win the Gold Cup, which is something that can happen with this generational shift that's going on with both national teams as well.
All right, I want to ask you about Atlanta United, because what I often get back from a lot of people, and I hear this a little bit too often, and I think it's a really weak argument, and it is Atlanta United's buying a title, like Manchester City's buying a title.
No.
I find it incredibly disrespectful to coaches, players, organizations. And then people think, you know, they just plopped this team down and everybody came. They don't realize the work that went into it in Atlanta, setting this team up, the things they did in the community, the hires they made, the autonomy that Arthur Blank gave the likes of Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra, the foresight to go hire a manager like Tata Martino, who has coached teams in very different ways around the world, in very different playing styles, as you know, Naib, and is wonderful with young guys, engages his staff, but is autocratic when he needs to be. It's about playing style. It's about fan appreciation. It's about the timing of their entry into the market. It's about a lot of things. Do you hear that often? And I mean, I totally refute that, because It's more than just resources. There's a lot of teams that have a lot of resources that aren't winning anything.
No. I think it's a success story, you know. And, of course, a lot of people are going to measure it if they win the MLS Cup or not. But even if they don't win it, I think it's a marvelous story for the game here in America, in the U.S. You know, we always talk about how can the sport grow? How can the sport advance? Well, look at Atlanta and how they're filling that football stadium, or is it Falcon Stadium, to its full capacity. And the product that they're showing, people are tuning in to watch their games because it's attractive football.
100%. I think you just hit the nail on the head. I have to think, as an out-of-market team, Atlanta's the team you want to watch. I'm that way. When I see Atlanta on TV, I want to watch it because I know it's going to be exciting. It's up-tempo. It's Miguel Almiron on the ball. It's Villalba. It's a goal scorer that never looks happy, even if he scored three goals in a game. It's just exciting.
Martinez, you know, when he came from Italy, you never expected he was going to be this great striker. I mean, and I think it took a lot of work just to bring in Tata to the club and to tell him, you know, give him the keys to Tata and let's start something special here. And, you know, and it's not something that happened from one day to the other. It took time to get the players understanding the ideas and then to executing it.
Yeah, by the way, they identified these players also. It's not like they just got handed them. They had to go out and identify them, find them, get them under contract. If you don't want a competitive edge sometimes due to resources, you know, there's a lot of amateur soccer out there. You can watch it in Houston. You can go watch high school, college soccer if you don't like the fact that some teams are going to spend more money than others. I mean, I remember a time when everybody was complaining, MLS is boring. We need a villain. We need a team. We need a New York Yankees of Major League Soccer. We need a team that's a villain. Last thought to you, Naib, and then we got to go to break.
No, well, we'll see exactly how the Liguilla turns out. You know, there's a lot of favorites. America's even a favorite with Piojo Herrera. It's such a need of a title there with the club. Hasn't won one since he took over the national team back in 2013 and wants to get back into club-level success. So it's an exciting time, and hopefully the people can tune in, and that's a good spectacle.
You're a great man for coming in studio, Naib. We're going to do it again real soon. We're going to get a roundtable going in here with a lot of the great people in the soccer community of Houston. Great stuff here tonight. Thank you, Glenn, for all the insight on the Liga MX. We're going to take a break here. This first hour has been presented by the Texas Children's Hospital. Now, I know I put out we were going to have Daryl Morey on the show. He had to cancel this morning. He did. He's going to come on hopefully next week. So he wants to do the interview. Just the timing didn't work out. Again, a big thanks. And our hearts go out to the Napier family, Joe B. Napier, owner Bob McNair of the Houston Texans. We got 10 seconds here, and I'm going to let you know, coming up in the second hour, Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan, Chad Riley, the coach of Notre Dame, and also we'll have on the program another surprise guest, Dave Durr.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.